This podcast is brought to you by my own emotional workouts for your well-being training program. If you have no idea what that is, no worries. It's basically like a personalized workout program. But instead of doing 100 squats, you're working out your mind, your well-being, and your emotions. Think workouts, but for your well-being, backed by thousands of years worth of philosophy. When I was starting out in life, I would have benefited so much by having someone like Rumi or Plato or Aristotle to just be there by my side and coach me so I could design a life that was meant for me. Unfortunately, that's not available. Emotional workouts are the closest thing to just that. As you navigate through your life, emotional workouts remove all that stuff that gets in the way when you're trying to make those tough life choices. You can check it out at emotionalworkouts.com. Again, it's emotionalworkouts.com. Okay, on to the show. Welcome to this week's episode with Natalie Tesler. Natalie is the founder and owner of Spa Space, one of the largest day spas in Chicago, actually employing over 90 plus individuals. Natalie shares on this episode how she moved from a lawyer in New York City to owning the largest day spa in Chicago. She explains how she always knew she loved entrepreneurship, but she just couldn't quite see the path in her 20s. She actually started a business when she was just 11 years old. This episode is filled with so much honesty about how she walked away from not one, but two high-level degrees to follow her dreams. She explains how she just wanted to be that person who loved what she did and how she turned that dream into a reality. If you like today's episode, hop over to iTunes, hit subscribe, or leave a review. Every little bit counts. Thanks so much for listening. Okay, so I am insanely excited because today I have one of my dear, dear friends, Natalie Tesler, on the show. She is the owner of Spa Space in Chicago, and it's the largest day spa. And she's been the owner for 15 years. It's amazing. If you're living in Chicago, definitely stop by. I go there all the time. Great massages, pedicures, manicures, anything you want. But I invited Natalie on the show today because I know her story. I know that there was this big leap, turn in her life from when the days that she was in law school and getting started to this spa. But I thought you would love to hear the story. So Natalie, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. So happy to be here.
Thank you so much for agreeing to talk about your story. I love it. It's such an incredible story about finding a life that really feels great and authentic to you. So if you could take us back to before the spa, before you jumped into this labor of love. I know you were in New York, you did your degree in law, you did a graduate degree in law. But what happened that got you from law school to a spa to, right? Like that's such a leap that most people wouldn't think of.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a question I get a lot. Like, how did you go from being an attorney to opening a spa, and where's the connect there? And part of the answer is that the truth is that the connect is the disconnect. Like, I wanted to do something completely different from what I was doing. So I almost looked for what was the opposite of what I was doing. And in a lot of ways, owning, running a spa is the opposite of being a lawyer, in that being a lawyer is being surrounded by people who don't really want to be there, whether it's the other lawyers or it's the clients. Whereas a spa is a place where people really ideally love to go and want to be and want to work. So I was looking for a completely different environment. But as far as how I got into the whole law thing, that was really, when I think about it, I almost think of it as something I fell into, which sounds crazy because who falls into becoming ultimately a tax lawyer? But I think that when you are finishing college and you're not knowing what you want to do with your life, I think I knew that eventually I wanted to have my own business. That was my goal.
And when you said you knew this, like, was it something you knew young or what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the time I was really young, I had that desire to create and start something. I'm not creative in like a traditional sense. You know, I don't have artistic skill or musical skill or what most people think of as creativity. And for me, my creative outlet was thinking about ideas and business ideas and how to execute on them. And I even think back to when I was probably in third grade, and I convinced my best friend who lived across the street that for the summer we needed to start a day camp. And, you know, I had done some babysitting, very minor babysitting, because I was still like really too young to even be a babysitter. I think I was 10 or 11 or something. And I knew that you could earn probably in those days like $2 an hour being a babysitter for one kid or one household.
Sure.
And I started calculating, well, if we babysat multiple kids at the same time, then we could compound those numbers. And I had a spreadsheet and we went door to door in the neighborhood and asked, and said, you know, would you like to send your kid to our camp? And we gave it a name. It was the Tessmeyer Summer Camp. Tess for Tessler, Mar for Margolis. That was her last name. Very creative. And shockingly, these parents were like, sure, you want to take my kid? Like, go for it.
Oh my God.
And I had this whole spreadsheet showing how much money we could make by the end of the summer.
Spreadsheet in third grade? Like,
yeah. I mean, not like a spreadsheet, like you're thinking like a Microsoft Excel, but like, you know, I had it written out, like how many kids times how many hours over how many days.
Oh my God.
And what that would add up to. And it was some, I have no idea what the number was, but it was a big number that was enough to convince my friend who had zero interest in starting a camp or doing a spreadsheet to do this with me. Now, camp only lasted, I think, 2 days.
Right. What was the total net haul?
I'm not even sure we ever collected money on it, honestly. I think when we canceled camp after 2 days, the parents were sort of, you know, yeah, like, all right, go away now. You know, we've played this game. But, you know, I always was thinking of these ideas and mm-hmm. always wanting to try to do my own thing. And when I was finishing college, I really didn't know what I wanted my career to be. I mean, I knew, like I said, that I wanted to start some kind of a business at some point, but you can't really graduate from college and start a business. I mean, A, you have no money. B, like nobody's going to give you any money.
There was no internet back then, so it wasn't like you could just pop up a website.
That's right.
Yeah.
And yeah. I needed to get a real job or go to school. And for me, going to school felt a lot easier than going out and looking for a job in some unknown field. And I had been encouraged by some of my professors to go to law school. And I actually loved law school. I was one of the few people who went through law school really enjoying it. I loved the learning. I loved the writing and the arguing. And I just loved it. It was...
Yeah, because I don't hear very many people say they love law school. I know a lot of friends that are lawyers who enjoy being lawyers, but I haven't heard too many people,
yeah,
you know, who like the process.
It was weird that way. I loved being a student. And when I graduated from law school, I was sort of in the same place. I knew I didn't want to be a lawyer, really. I loved law school, but I also knew that going and joining a firm was going to mean a lot of sitting at a desk buried in paper. And that wasn't me. You know, I wanted to be out in the world, like creating something. So again, that left me like, where do I go now? I could take a job in a law firm, but I know that's not really what I want. And I tried to actually convince my law school friends at that time to, instead of going out and taking these jobs at law firms, making almost six figures, which in those days was a huge amount of money.
Sure.
I mean, even in these days, it's real money. And I tried to convince them, let's just hang a shingle and start our own law firm. Like, that sounded fun to me. And they all thought I was crazy. And they were like, no, you know, we don't know what we're doing. And I'm like, but we'll learn, you know. And I really believed that we could go out and do that. But I couldn't get anybody to do it with me. And I didn't have the courage or really the means to do it on my own. So I went back to school. And again, I had been encouraged by a professor to pursue tax law, which was a very specific area of law. And there's a master's program that's available in that. And I went and did it. It was really, really hard. I can't say I loved that the way that I loved law school because it was so intense. But when I finished, it was just a year-long program. I mean, I was fully trained to go out and get a job in a law firm as a tax lawyer. And that was about it. So that's what I did. I mean, at this point, it was like I needed to start making money and stop going to school.
And how long did you work for?
I worked in total as a lawyer about 4 years.
And did you enjoy time, or was it all what you had imagined, like sitting at the desk and not? I think it's so interesting how many people go into things, maybe like you said, because the schooling was interesting or they were encouraged by somebody. But the day-to-day, when you think of Monday through Friday and what you're doing, Nobody tells you that part, right? Like, this job is really sitting at a desk. And that really matters, right? And I think our school system fails us in that way.
I think it really matters. And, you know, what they teach you in law school, of course, it bears relevance on what you're doing as a lawyer, but it's not the most exciting cases like the ones you're learning in law school that are the most interesting.
Right.
It's kind of, you know, mundane and very repetitious. And tax law was a lot of problem solving. And it was cool in some ways. I mean, I learned a lot and I definitely felt challenged. And I was around some of the smartest people I had ever met. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I was sitting at a desk. Not just at the end of the day, all day. I was sitting at a desk and I was literally physically buried in the IRS tax code books, because in those days you really had to use books. It wasn't available online the way that it is now. And I would have 10 or 12 open books of referring back and forth from this code section to that code section. And it just was not how I wanted to spend my life. And, you know, I would look at the people who were more senior to me in the firm and what they were doing. And it just wasn't a place I wanted to get to. So it's like, why climb that mountain if you know that the view is going to be junk? You
know? It's so interesting. I hear time and again, like, so many people make that leap because they look forward. They look at the end of the road, right? Like, if everything goes perfectly and I'm the mentor, I'm the partner in your case in the law firm, right? Or I know somebody who was an MD, PhD, and he was like, best case scenario, I'm just like my mentor. And I don't want that life, right?
Right.
It's a great indication that you might want to rethink the track you're on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So here you are, you're buried in paperwork, your desk. I have this funny image of you just surrounded by books.
That's real.
And it's funny, you think of like cartoons or anything with an image of a lawyer and they're always buried like that.
Yeah.
And you're just somebody who wants to be on the go, wants to be on the move, wants to be on that creative
interacting
space.
Interacting with people. You know, I really wanted to be in a people job.
Yeah. So how do you get from there to saying, it's a spa? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
how did that transition happen?
Well, for me, I mean, so that was my first job as a lawyer. I took another job when I moved to Chicago. So I was in New York at that time, and I knew I was not on the right path. And I also knew that starting a business in New York was going to be much harder than most places where you would start a business, largely just because New York is so expensive, and it just felt very daunting. So I decided to move to Chicago, which was like closer to home, and I had gone to college at Wisconsin, and so Chicago felt like a kind of a more manageable big city where I had contacts, and I moved to Chicago knowing that I would start a business in Chicago in the near future, but I still didn't know what, and I still needed to earn a living, and so I decided, all right, when I move, I'll try a different area of law and maybe something more human and see if that resonates before I just walk away after all those years of schooling.
That's what I was going to ask. So you knew you wanted to start something, but not necessarily outside of your field at this point.
Right, right. Exactly. I really didn't know yet.
But it's interesting that entrepreneurial bug is just, it's just sitting there, right? Over and over.
It's definitely there.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And I took a job with a firm in Chicago doing estate planning, which drew on my tax background, but it felt like it was going to be more human. It was more interacting with people about their plans for the future and their families. And, you know, in that sense, it was more human, but ultimately, again, it was paperwork and tons of it. And I just didn't feel like I was doing something that I really cared about. Ultimately, that is what it boiled down to. I just didn't care. And one night after working at this firm for a year or so, I was out for dinner with a girlfriend of mine who we had both lived in New York at the same time, and she was pursuing a career in journalism. And when I was working in New York practicing law, she had her job basically getting coffee for the editor of the magazine where she was working. She was very low on the totem pole. And she was dedicated, though. I mean, she knew she was going to be a journalist, and she was paying her dues. And I left for New York. I was gone about a year. In that year, she really sought out a job that she wanted. And when she came to Chicago, she was actually on her very first assignment as a reporter. She was a journalist. She had gotten a real job, and she was on assignment. And we were out for dinner, and she was just bursting with enthusiasm. And she said to me, she looked at me with these like bright eyes and she said, "Oh my God, I love my job," like that. And it was such a moment for me because I was so excited for her, but I did not understand what it meant to feel like that at all.
Yeah.
Like there was just none of that passion, that love, that bright-eyedness about what I was doing. And that really for me was the moment. I was like, it is time for me to start down a path where I'm going to feel like that. And I quit my job that Friday.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Without knowing what I was going to do.
All these years I've known you, I didn't know.
You didn't know that story?
Yeah. That's so crazy.
I know. It's such a clear turning point for me.
Yeah. I used to think people who said, I love my job, like I thought they were lying a little bit. I was like, that's just not possible.
I know. It was clear she was not lying and I wanted some of what she had. That became very important to me.
So you left your job, you resigned. You went through the process, you've got spa space, you're thinking about this, but how do you deal with the doubts and the fears and you have to raise money, you've never had a business, right? Like all these things for all those people out there who are thinking about making a change, right? And you're leaving, I'm sure at this point, a highly paying job, right? I mean, this has got to be, you know, you've got several degrees, you're downstream, you've niched yourself out, right? You've got to be doing reasonably well. How do you deal with the stress of saying, like, I'm leaving all this money, I'm leaving all of the practical, high-value things that one can really get a lot of confidence, a lot of security from, right? It pays the bills. It's very reassuring, probably. You could spend the rest of your life there and never have to worry again. So there you are, you've quit. How do you handle those anxieties that come up?
You know, it's funny that you asked that question because when I did quit, I stayed on for a period of time. They were a little short-handed and they asked me to stay at the firm sort of hourly to help out while I figured out what I was going to do. And that actually worked out great for me because it allowed me to earn some money while I did figure out what kind of business I was going to start. And what was so interesting during that period of time was that people, you know, kind of word spread that I was leaving and that I didn't know what I was doing, but I was going to start a business. And my office became like a revolving door of lawyers who were in shock that I was doing this. And they wanted to know, oh my God, how did you get the courage? Like, where did you get the chutzpah to make this change? And you don't even know what you're doing. And they were baffled and they were clearly intrigued. You know, there were a lot of people who were
very
intrigued.
What did you say to them?
Well, I was just very honest. I mean, for me, there's two buckets of fear, right? There's the fear of losing the security of a paying job.
Yeah.
And then there's the fear of wasting your life doing something that you don't care about.
Mm.
And for me, that was much scarier. You know,
I mean, yeah.
That's really what it boiled down to. And, you know, I was fortunate. I was in a position where I had nobody to take care of except for myself. I wasn't trying to support anybody else. I had saved up not a lot, but, you know, a little bit of money. So I had some cushion. I was able to still work hourly at the firm while I kind of figured this out. So in some ways, I had more of a security blanket than a lot of people who might be thinking about taking this leap. But I was certainly walking away from a lot of security.
But would you say you focused on that second fear more, that the fear of staying and losing your whole life just became the one that actually freaked you out more?
It was the combination of that fear of wasting my life and the enticement of feeling the way that my girlfriend felt, that excitement, that passion, like just wanting that feeling.
Yeah.
So it was those two things combined.
So in coaching, a big thing is this pain pleasure concept. And so essentially what you did was attach the pain to staying and the pleasure to leaving, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of people will say, no, the pain point is leaving because I'm giving up these things. And the pleasure point is staying and keeping all these things, and the pain point is the unknown, right? So you just kind of reversed it, which is super cool.
I mean, I certainly didn't do that intentionally. That was just truly how I felt. And once I started down the path of figuring out what kind of business I was going to start, the world just opened up to me. I mean, it was really incredible how everything sort of aligned to help allow me to achieve what I was trying to achieve. And I don't mean to say that it was easy. I mean, I think that when you set a goal, the only way to assure getting there is to be incredibly resilient and refuse to look at the roadblocks as barriers. You just have to look at them as more as hurdles or something to get over or get around.
Sure.
But you can't allow anything that's blocking your vision of the goal to be a reason to stop. So it's so much about persistence and resilience.
And so were there times where you felt taken to your edge in resilience, yes, and persistence? What was one of your break points where you almost said, what have I done?
Well, you know, I had to raise money to open the spa. And it was a real amount of money. And I was only able to myself put in maybe 10% of what I needed to raise in total. And, you know, that was an interesting process. I had never raised money before to start a business. And I had to kind of learn everything as I went. And I was collecting investors along the way, I mean, which is a whole other story. But I was getting really close to the end of that process. And as I was getting close to the end of the process of raising money, I was getting very close to the time where I was going to have to actually start writing checks to the architect and the contractor and, you know, to get things in motion.
Sure.
And I had a group of investors who had said, we want whatever you haven't yet sold, we want. They were really excited about what I was doing and they wanted in and they were going to take the rest of the deal. So I was done raising money. And that was a huge
relief,
hurdle, right?
Yeah,
a huge
yeah.
relief. And it was like, okay, this is really happening. And so I continued down the path of hiring people basically to get things moving while I was simultaneously closing the deal with the investors.
And how many hours are you working a day at this point?
Oh, I mean, I was working all day, all night. I mean, but it didn't feel like work. Not work as I had grown accustomed to it.
You You're
know, I was just doing what I wanted to be doing. Like, you couldn't pull me away to do something else because there was nothing else I wanted to be doing. It was so exciting and
so
captured my attention.
Even though you've gone into the state, you're in this stressful place, you're about to tell me what that was, but yeah. like... That felt better to you than being buried in the books.
Oh my God. I mean, night and day. Night and day. I was yeah. energized. You know, before when I was practicing law and my alarm would go off in the morning, I'd be like, oh, you know, I literally would set it 45 minutes in advance just so I could snooze 5 times for 9 minutes each. You know, I had it all mapped out and it was just this long, brutal process of just getting out of bed and into the shower to go to work.
Yeah.
And once I was doing this, it was like, as soon as my eyes opened, I was like popping out of bed and running to my computer and
despite the hurdles, despite like the stress. Yeah.
Right. It was just, it was fun. Yes, it was stressful, but it was captivating.
So you've got these donors, you've closed.
Not donors, investors, but yes, so I was getting close important distinction.
Yeah.
And I was getting close to closing it out because I had raised all the money I needed. And part of the thing was I had also gotten an SBA-backed loan for a significant amount of money, but it was dependent on my raising all of this other capital. So there was a lot riding on my having raised that full amount of capital. And then one of the investors started, this group, the guy who kind of was representing this group of investors, stopped returning my phone calls. And I couldn't get a hold of him, and I didn't know what was going on, and I reached out to one of the other people in the group, and it just basically all fell apart. They just decided they didn't want to do it, but didn't tell me.
I'm getting goosebumps. That sounds horrible.
It was horrible. I mean, it was so stressful, and it was also, I mean, I had already raised about 3/4 of the money, so it's not like I felt like, oh, now I can't raise the money. It was more that it was throwing off my whole timeline, and their decision to back out before I had even done anything was sort of, it felt like a strike against me. It felt like faith was being pulled. Mm-hmm. And I think that's made me start questioning my own faith and what I was doing and worrying about the money of the other people who had invested.
Right. Did they stop answering my calls because something happened on their end? Or is this because I did something, I said something
Was just this a bad idea? And once they really sat down and talked about it, they're like, you know what, this is actually a horrible idea.
I'm sure the fantasies were blowing up in your head, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it was a point at which I thought, is this a sign? You know, should I stop here or should I go out and start trying to raise this money again?
So what'd you do? I mean, clearly you have the business, so
right?
You didn't stop, but like, what
I
was your next
stop?
Did you sit for like a week? Like, what did you?
I think what I did, it's a little convoluted in my memory now, but I talked to people who I trusted who were important sort of advisors to me. My dad, a close friend from the law firm. And, you know, I think I started expressing some of my fears and they were really encouraging and they gave me ideas and they really believed in me. And I think they had seen how far I had come. You know, at this point I had been working on it for probably 9 months and I'd gotten so close to closing out the deal. And I just went back at it. I mean, I don't know what else to say other than I really didn't want to walk away from it. I actually got a job opportunity at that time, kind of out of the blue at the same time. Somebody asked me to come and work for them. And it was kind of an interesting, exciting opportunity. And I thought, well, maybe I should do that. Maybe this is all telling me something. But really, when I looked in my soul, walking away made me feel so down and sad, and it just felt wrong, you know?
Yep.
And
yep.
So it was just back at it. And, you know, it did extend the process by a few months, but ultimately I was able to raise the money from, you know, multiple investors. And, you know, it all turned out to be for the best. You know, looking back, it's the best thing that could have happened because it was a group of people who wound up being extremely supportive. And
but having those trusted mentors around you, yeah, right, in those dark moments, I think, is just very critical. A lot of people go it alone in business, and right? Wouldn't you say that that's a critical piece of the puzzle?
Absolutely. I mean, you need to surround yourself by people who believe in you and who are going to be supportive of what you're trying to do, you know, emotionally supportive, because it's too easy to turn around and say, forget it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And honest with you if you're off path.
Right.
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 I mean,
yes.
Both. Because yes, if you know it's just somebody who's blowing smoke, right, I mean, you're going to start wondering, maybe they're not being honest and maybe they don't really know.
That's right.
Oh, I love it. What a story. And so you leave this high-paying job, you go off and you do this, you have to raise money. It almost falls apart on you. So you start the spa, you start to build up momentum. Are you living the life? Like, did you ever have that moment where you thought, oh my God, I'm the woman in the coffee shop who just loves what she does? Did it dawn on you like, wow, I'm really here? Like, I'm the happy one smiling, like super enthusiastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think it did dawn on me that I really appreciated my own enthusiasm for what I was doing. And I was living in this moment. I mean, especially the beginning stages were so exciting and it was fun to see it come to reality. You know, mm-hmm. It's like a vision becomes a reality. And in my case, it's a physical space, you know, the actual spa. And I do remember having those moments of like surging happiness of how excited I was by it and how much fun it was. And I do not mean to express here that it was easy or all rainbows and sunshine. It was, there were a lot of dark days. I had a major problem with the contractor, wound up in a lawsuit over the build out of the space. And that was horrible. And September 11th happened about 3 months after we opened for business. And the loop where the spa is was an absolute ghost town because nobody wanted to be near what was then the Sears Tower, the Willis Tower. And, you know, there were a lot of really hard days, but what I feel like what was the truth was that success became not some end place. You know, it wasn't like this will have been a good decision if the spa earns X amount of money, you know, or if the spa is profitable, or even if the investors are paid back. Of course, there were those goals out there. But for me, it was successful just that I was waking up and doing something that I loved, you know. And for me personally, that was really the goal, was to do something I loved. That was my goal.
So. Oh, I love it. So this story is just an incredible one. And I knew having you on here would be so much fun just to share. And honestly, I think I learned a few new details about it that I didn't know. And I feel like we're kind of almost segueing in nicely into the point of the podcast, right? Like this is really a podcast about having success with authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. And what does an authentic life really mean to you then?
I rarely think about it in those terms, but what's important to me and what I think has really changed, you know, my life from being what it was kind of pre-making this leap and post-making this leap is that in my pre-life, I was just going through the motions, and I almost felt like things were happening to me as opposed to I was making things happen. Like, it felt all very passive. And I know that it sounds strange, because how do you become a lawyer and go work in a big law firm and all that without, you know, while you're being passive? But it was in some ways the path of least resistance. And I was just doing it because it was what was expected, or it seemed like an acceptable path. I don't really even know, but I did really feel like I fell into this. Like, I'm sitting at my desk and this is what has happened to me. And then in my post life, it was more like I was driving the train, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was making my choices about how to spend my time and what my goals would be and what the view would look like once I did climb the mountain. That felt like it was controlled by me rather than something outside of me.
Absolutely. And I don't think it's strange. I mean, this is obviously, we're friends. I've been talking you to death about this mm-hmm. book idea that I've worked on and I've released. But this idea of, we learn things like being a lawyer is just a path that makes sense, right? There's so many TV shows where you're up there and you're giving your speech in front of the court, you know, and it's super sexy and appealing. And
your parents are like, oh, that sounds like an excellent career. And your, you know, professors are like, oh, this is something you're really well suited for, you know.
Yeah. I had a professor approach me who said you'd be great to have a degree in a PhD in neuropsych. I mean, can you imagine me sitting around like memorizing parts of the brain? Like, for all those people out there, me and rote memorization are not. Natalie knows it's
your brain would be wasted by doing that.
Oh my God. Yeah. But, you know, I guess I did reasonably well in some test, and maybe he was somebody I listened to, and all of a sudden I find myself in a PhD program wondering, how did I get here? Right.
Right. Right.
So I don't think that's strange. I think that's what happens. And then we can feel it though in our bodies. And what I love about your story is that you're so true to yourself and you were willing to make that leap when all conventional wisdom would tell you you're crazy, right? Who gives that up? I mean, you know what, Natalie, like, suck it up, work harder. These feelings you're having, they're just symptomatic of you wanting too much out of life, right? Like, these are all these things we tell ourselves to deny our own truth. And, you know, we end up 20, 30 years later, feeling really down and sort of, like you said, we haven't lived a life that makes sense to us.
That's right. I mean, if you're going to be happy, this is the way that I see it. If you're going to be happy, you have to make the choices that drive your passion and your interests. And I guess that's what you mean when you're saying an authentic life. It's you're being true to yourself.
Yeah, and I think that concept of true to oneself mm-hmm. gets confusing because we've learned all these things about what happiness should look like, right? And we confuse, no, I'm being true to myself. Like, I think I like law. I liked law school, right, in your case, or, right, I have my own stories. And it feels somewhat true, but you feel in your body like there's something just off here and I can't put my finger on it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we talked about your path to being an authentic life, that it was one that twisted and turned in through law school. But do you feel like there was anybody in your life who really gave you the courage? Did you have somebody that helped you through those turning point moments? You mentioned your father, that give you a little more permission to follow that voice?
I mean, I do think that the emotional support of my family was really helpful. Mm-hmm. There was actually a point when I was in law school when I recognized that although I loved law school, I was never going to be a lawyer in the long term. I knew that. And I thought, well, maybe I should leave now and start pursuing some other field. And my parents were very resistant to that idea. I will never forget telling them this over dinner. And let's just say there were tears involved and they were not mine. I finished because I liked it. You know, there was no real compelling reason not to. I didn't really know what I wanted to do instead. And I think that after I practiced for a few years and my parents saw that I did give it a real try and that I really was serious. I even like wrote a Jerry Maguire type statement of, you know, like a mission. I can't think of what it's called, but one of those like mission statements.
Yeah.
I kind of woke up one day and like wrote this all out and I sent it to them. And I think once they...
Like a life mission statement?
Yeah. Sort of like a vision that I had for my life. Yeah.
That's awesome. Like I always encourage that in my clients.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like it, because it gives you some clarity because again, like school teaches us to learn calculus or algebra or right, read certain books, but it doesn't teach you how to think about your life, right? Right. I think it's so funny that we leave and we have all this education and yet you're like, what do I want to do?
Oh, right. It's so true. And I hear people say that all the time, like I want to do something else, but I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was for me the starting point of it. So I wrote this statement, which is, you know, I still have it somewhere. And actually when I read it, I'm just mortified. It's like just embarrassing.
Why would it?
I don't know. I think it was very pie in the sky, sort of naive.
Overly dreamy.
Anything actually that I've written from my past and I go back to read, I sort of cringe over.
Sure.
I don't know if other people do that, but I definitely do.
I can't read my own handwriting, so I can't go back and read.
That's a gift. Trust me, that's a gift.
Gibberish.
But when I did that and I sent it to my parents, I think it probably really struck a chord with them that, and I think it was so, at the time, so real and true as far as how I was feeling and what I wanted that they really embraced it. Mm. And they said, you know, we support that. Like, we think you're capable of it and
that's
go
awesome.
For it.
That's awesome.
Know? That made a big difference. Like, I don't think I could have made that leap without people who I knew loved me and wanted the best for me without them saying like, we believe in you, you can do this.
Yeah. Again, getting somebody in your life. And if you're not lucky enough to have a parent or a brother or sister, you know, definitely seek out friendships. So we are friends and our kids are in school together. So, you know, life goes past just our businesses. We have our children, we have our families, we have our friendships, we have our interests. How do you keep yourself from making inauthentic decisions? How do you, you know, as you build a family, as you build a life, is there a process that you go through? Is there anything you could share so that all these stressful times that come up require us to go to something so we don't make choices that we then look at later and say, how did I get here?
You know, I've never really thought about that, to be honest. And I can't say it's something that I consciously do. But I do think, like anything else, it's probably a bit of a skill that gets honed and starts to come more naturally. So I think that I tend not to do things that don't feel right to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm out of practice of doing that. And so
yeah.
I just really don't.
And can I put you on the spot as my friend? Like when you say it feels right, is there a way you could describe that, like sensation? What does feeling right mean? Is it like a body, mind, spirit kind of like, does it feel right in your body? Like when you're doing something that doesn't feel right versus feels
right? Yeah, I mean, I do think it's almost a physical sensation and it's nagging. You know, I guess when something doesn't feel right, it annoys me and it, you know, I think about it laying in bed at night. It keeps me awake. I don't sleep well when things don't feel right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it is somewhat physical in its manifestation. And
the thought reoccurs over and over.
Yeah. I think it just is like a nagging feeling of ickiness. And when something does feel right, I'm generally energized by it, and I do sleep well.
Yeah, maybe apprehensive about the enormity of what you're taking on, but not nagging, annoying. Would you say that?
Yeah, and I think when you lose a fear of failure, it opens up so many more possibilities. It makes everything less scary, I guess.
Mm-hmm. How do you think about failure? Like, what does that mean to you?
To me, failure is not trying something that you want to do.
Mm.
I think that success is simply going after what you want. And the result of that is meaningless.
So if something fails for you in your life, and I won't put you on the spot and make you tell us one, but if you, like something really just epically fails, like I know you've got this great business and family, but if some piece of it doesn't go well, how do you think about it so you sleep well?
I just do everything I can that I'm capable of to turn it around. And so if something isn't going well at work, I try to think of everything I can to turn it around. And at that point, I sort of let go of the outcome. I think that it's maybe easier to describe in the opposite, which is if I'm wanting to do something and I'm not doing it, or I'm wanting to accomplish something and I'm not doing all the steps that I could be doing to get there, I start to feel really bad about myself, you know?
So it's not the outcome, but it's just whether or not you've put the effort in all the ways you know possible.
Yes, and I tend to beat myself up a lot for being passive about things. That's where I struggle to evolve.
So now that you're in this place of success and authenticity, the last question I have for you, do you have any daily practices, habits to keep yourself in this good place? I mean, I know you exercise a lot. Like, what do you do to keep yourself grounded and feeling good?
You know, I try to surround myself by people who I really enjoy. And I definitely do some exercise that really helps me mentally. I get a lot of my ideas during exercise and clarity. I'm not anything hardcore. I do yoga, I walk. But those are times when I do seem to have, like, my juices seem to be best flowing. And so I can actually solve a lot of problems while I'm exercising.
Yeah.
That I can execute on later. And honestly, I really try to feel grateful for all of the amazing positive things in my life, and people especially, you know, and that's my family, but it's also people that I work with and friends. And I definitely do. When I get in bed at night, it's not like it's a plan that I have or it's on a schedule, but that is what comes into my mind, is like gratitude for the really positive things. And then I try to think, like, am I really appreciating those things enough during the day? And I'm always like, no, I'm not. But I think that's part of what makes me know that I'm in the right place,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
at least trying to get there.
Well, I obviously could talk to you all day. Yeah. We share so many great lunches. I just can't thank you enough for this honest and really helpful walk through your story, your past, everything that got you to this place. I think there's just an incredible amount of value here. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. And I have to say that, like, the exercise of being interviewed about this definitely makes you think about it in a way that you really don't on a daily basis. So I think what you're doing for people by doing these interviews, and certainly through the book, is very, very helpful, whether, you know, wherever you are on that path. I feel like it helps remind you of what is really important.
Well, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.